You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, load another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
This is the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guest today is Sandra Parker Murray, a member of the Communication Workers of America and Colorado Independent Drivers Union. Sandra is a leader and activist for worker justice. Welcome to the Labor Exchange, Sandra.
Thank you, Robert, for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. I forgot to mention, too, you also served on the Paid Family Task Force. So that's something we'll get into a little later. But before we get started, we like to get to know our guests. So I'll start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am Sandra Parker Murray. I have been a CWA member for 25 years. I was, of course, born and raised in the Mississippi Delta, moved to Atlanta in 1996. And started at AT&T in 1997. Then there was a spinoff, Lucent Technologies, and we were work completed because when they hire you, you're like a term employee. So they didn't get the contract they were thought they were going to get with IBM. So they work completed us, but the union stepped in and said, "Okay, Lucent is just starting. We'll send you guys over there to interview." And we were still under the same CWA contract, and they sent us over there. So they hired us all that wanted to go. A year or two later, there was another spinoff, and it became Avaya. So I worked there in Atlanta for another 8-9 years, or maybe 10. And then in 2008, so up until 2008, they closed our center. So because of our collective bargaining agreement, we could follow our work. So there were some positions in Denver open. And I came out here and one other of the ladies I worked with, we came to Denver. So I've been here ever since. I did work in the labor movement in Atlanta. I was a union steward there at the job the job site in Atlanta. And when I came to Denver, I remained a union steward. The first thing I did when I came to Denver actually was work on the Obama campaign. And I went to the Invesco Fields where he was got the nomination. It was just so exciting. I came in July, and I think this happened in August or something. So really quickly kind of got involved. And then I took some time off and went back to school. And so in 2017, I took some political activist training through District 7 and became more active. So fast forward, here we are now. I'm lobbying for CWA and doing a lot of other stuff with CIGU. Fair Work Week with 9 to 5 and different organizations. So,
yeah, that's great. And as you mentioned, you're busy with a lot of different things, which I think is one of the things that made me want to bring you on this show, because you are, you know, constantly advocating at the Capitol. I also was at the stadium for Obama's acceptance speech. I was a volunteer handing out little American flags up at the nosebleed seats. So you had mentioned you started as a shop steward or you've been a shop steward. What do you see that role as being and what makes a good shop steward?
One who listens and does not dismiss anybody's issues. I mean, as petty as it may be, if it affects that person, you know, their stress level, them not wanting to come to work, et cetera, then it's, to me, it's an issue because other people may be suffering from the same thing. So I like to listen and just try to get involved. And somebody came to me, somebody reported to our area rep or head steward, that chief steward, that they had called me in the office after hours because I worked like the 10 to 7 shift. So when I got to work, the chief steward, Rita Scott, came to me and she said, "They told me that the management called you in the office after everybody has left. Don't you ever do that again. Do you remember orientation?" But you know, you're so excited about your job, you don't really think about what they tell you in orientation. I was like, I said, I didn't know, and I didn't want to lose my job. So I went in, you know, and I signed what she asked me to sign. So she said, "Don't you ever do that again, and we're going to grieve it." So she grieved it, and they like tore it up because she wasn't supposed to have me in there. And she said I was supposed to ask for a union rep, but of course we knew no union reps were there at that time of the evening. And so she kind of coached me and mentored me into becoming a steward. And then I started working with her on legislative stuff, phone banking and all that. I was started doing that in Atlanta. So I loved it then because I felt like I could use my voice to advocate for people who didn't know or were scared to speak up. And there are a lot, you would be amazed at the number of people who stay quiet and just take, you know, the abuse that they would, you know, would not have to take if they would, you know, speak up and say something. Yeah, I was well mentored. I love it. Every time I see Rita at another like function, I saw her in DC. I hadn't seen her since I left Atlanta, and it was just so good, and we had so much to catch up. I was like, "Rita, we got to stop talking so we can listen," because we had so much to catch up on. And she's
in addition to your work, you know, advocating for workers, you're also a delivery driver in those platform based apps. What's been your experience with driving, positive, and negative? What's been that experience, and then maybe how that ties to the Colorado Independent Drivers Union?
Okay, so yeah, during the pandemic, you know, when we were stuck in the house, we were working from home, and I was like, oh my God, I got to get out of this house. So that was something to get out of the house, drive, you know, on the freeway, wherever you go deliver food and pick it up. And there was little contact. So you didn't have a lot of contact with people, just going into the store with your mask on, picking up the food, and then taking it to the person and usually leaving it on the doorsteps. 99% of the time, you're just gonna leave the food. You don't have to make contact with the person who's ordering. So CIDU, I was actually sitting in on a meeting for our president, our local president, who couldn't make it. And so I ended up getting involved, and with me driving for DoorDash, I really understood, you know, what the drivers were talking about and what they were going through. So I started, you know, to help organize with them and do the planning, strategic planning meetings, et cetera. And I know that when I was driving, app companies always boast about the flexibility. And that's true. It does give you some flexibility. However, they still control you like you're an employer because they send you the orders. You have a few seconds you may have 30 seconds to decline or accept. Sometimes it doesn't give you exactly where it is. It'll tell you what it pays. But if you don't know where it is, then you kind of lose time. If you take an order that's 10, 15 miles away, then you have to come back, and that's idle time that you're not getting paid for. So you really are losing money. And during that time, gas prices were like going up. So it's almost like sometimes you don't get the minimum wage per hour. And that's what our fight was, especially with the food delivery, is that they allow the people who tip, the customers tip, to help pay you. And that's how you end up getting a little bit more money. If the customer doesn't tip, then you'll see what they'll pay you just a little more, maybe a dollar more or two if the customer doesn't tip. But if the customer tips, they're going to pay you the minimum, which I think is like $2.50 for a delivery. And this could be up to 7-8 miles. So, and when you decline the orders, if I just say decline, no, I'm not taking that because it's just too much for the little money, then your ratings drop, right? So they have like tier levels, and if you've made like, I'm gonna say 500 drives or had 500 orders in the previous month, then you may get a tier level where you get the top dasher orders, right? But if you drop, as you drop, then they become more as if you were a new driver, and you get less, get those 750 orders, you may get a 351 or something like that. So that's kind of like the downsides and what the advantage that they have over you as a driver. There's no real, you can call customer service when you're waiting on hold, you're losing time because you're out there to make the extra money too. And the longer you stay on the phone, the less you're working. So, and a lot of times they screw up by sending you the wrong information in the app. The maps are just horrible. So they'll send you somewhere where there's no store. It's it's a residential area. Like, there's no store on the street to pick up anything. So they would have screwed that up. So you got to, in order to get rid of the order off of your app, you have to call them. So then you got to stay online with them. You've missed 35 to 45 minutes just doing that. So those are downsides, and they really don't have a resolve for that. And me being a union member, knowing my rights, as a worker, whatever, I always tell them, you can't do this to me, and I send them a lot of emails, and I'm shocked that I've never been, like, my app has not been canceled, that they still allow me to work, because I'm real with them. When I call them, I was like, this is wrong. You got to pay me for this, because a lot of times they don't want to pay you.
So in October, the drivers held a rally, app-based drivers held a rally in downtown Denver. You were there, you were helping organize that. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that event and a little bit about the solidarity that you all are building with drivers.
I can, yes. We were at the airport, because that's where most of the drivers, gather to wait for rides. So we were out there about 2 weeks consecutively, speaking to drivers. It was because in the beginning, it was kind of, it's not so easy to trust somebody who says they're coming to help you, with the problem. So we had to just be out there constantly face to face and just, let them know. And I had to let them know that, hey, I'm a DoorDash driver. So I understand, when you feel like you're being cheated out of your wages, when you feel like your app is being unjustly deactivated. So I understand what you're talking about. So we had to go out there, and we got some of the drivers who were out there on site every day to help us out and to let them know. So when they really heard our story and saw where we were coming from, they were all engaged, because they knew that they some kind of way they needed help on what to do with this company, Uber and Lyft, taking advantage of them and not paying them what they used to. The rates that they pay them now has dropped so badly, and the deactivations, especially against immigrant drivers who speak English as a second language, drivers of color. It is awful the way they just deactivate them based on what a customer says when the customer does not want to pay or get their money back, because they get a refund. So yeah, the drivers were ready. They were hungry. They were eager. They was like, yeah, we need to get something done. Let's strike, let's rally. They were eager to do almost anything to help, their cause. So when we signed them up we signed them up as union members as well, and brought them down to the Capitol to, hear the speakers. We had passed out t-shirts. We got them to, bring others, tell other drivers, even the ones who don't work the airport area, who work just around Denver, that they know. Because there is a large, network and connection between the Uber and Lyft drivers. So again, it was a little bit challenging at first, but once they understood where we were coming from and that we were not there to take anything away from them, but to help them as, people in the labor movement, and knowing that what workers or independent contractors should get and not be treated unfairly. So it was so good. Everybody was hyped. They were glad to be down there. And it excited and motivated them more. And then, which led to another event at the airport. We had other people to just come out and speak, to let them know that they had a support system. And sometimes that's what workers need to know in mobilization events, that there is somebody fighting for them. Other than them, they're not just out there by themselves.
Yeah, you could definitely feel that in the crowd during that event. So another question on this. So voters in Colorado Springs elected, as far as I know, the first platform-based delivery driver to the House of Representatives. That's fellow CWA member Stephanie Vigil. What does it mean to have someone that has actually worked on these apps for their livelihood to be in the halls of power? What does that mean?
Because it brings the person who's closer to the issue closer to having the power to do something about it. So as a legislator, she can explain better, because she's done there. She's been there, done that. She has the whole story. So when it comes time to make, create some legislation that helps drivers, then you have the right person at the table. Because she knows, and she can fight back against the app-based companies who say, oh, this is not true, because it's her lived experience, you know, speaks for herself. So yes, Stephanie has been on calls with us for the last few years that I've been on them. And she understands. She totally gets it. And I'm so glad that she was elected and that she's there at the table.
Yeah, and she was the first to kind of explain the various ways in which you work the apps to try to make it work. She'll do multiple ones at one time. I want to switch topics, but before we move on, if we have Uber, Lyft, DoorDash drivers, cabbies that want to get in touch with Colorado Independent Drivers United, how can they get a hold of you?
We have a website called Colorado Independent Drivers United. We also have a Facebook page that you can go on, and there's a QR code on there, which you can scan on your phone, and it will take you directly to an app where you can sign up as a union member and sign up for any of our events that are coming up.
I'll make sure to update the link in our show notes, so anyone who wants to connect with you, make sure you go there. So I wanted to switch to something I'm passionate about. You served on the Paid Family Leave Task Force and are still involved with its implementation. Can you give a bit of background, like define paid family leave, and then talk about why it's important for Colorado's workers?
So paid family leave is going to be a Colorado state program where you pay into, or your employer and you pay into an insurance that the state will hold. And if there is a qualified leave, if you need to be off for any kind of surgery or procedure, and your doctor qualifies it as for FMLA, which is a state paid program, which is totally separate from the federal program, because for some companies, the federal program is not paid, but you have job protection for up to 12 weeks. With the state program, you have that protection, but you also have wage replacement. And it started actually January 1st, the premiums will start, and the employer pays about 0.45%, and the employee pays 0.45. It's like 0.9%, 0.9% of your wages. And then you can get up to 90% of your wages back for lower income work earners, and then 60-something% for higher wage earners. Again, it starts this year paying into the program. However, the first leave will not start until 2024, January. So that is to make the program solvent, so that there's enough money, in the program to start the leave. And it's also for like expectant mothers, bonding time with their babies, fathers as well. So let me see what else I can say about it. It's a great program because it'll give people who normally may not take off and take care of themselves or their family because they cannot afford to lose that income. It helps them to be able to take care of themselves and still pay their bills. They don't have to choose between the two. So we're doing the implementation, the benefit rules, et cetera. And the most important thing I believe is to have someone on site at these large companies, because just, posting something on the break room board is not really letting people know what the benefit really does. And a lot of people who do not follow the news or not at the Capitol or just not involved in it, they really don't know what their rights are. Even I met a whole bunch of people during COVID that didn't know that they get paid for COVID time off when they're off sick. So they lost income, and somebody just happened to contact me, and I was like, oh no, they should get paid for that. And they had to go back and get their payment. And this one company had to go back and pay 10 people, It's the laws from not knowing, and spreading the word is more important than just having that outreach to communities who just does not normally follow that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, because it's outside the culture. I had my first paid day off was with a union contract. I'm talking, I worked 10 years, not a single paid sick day. Like, that was just, normal. The paid sick leave for COVID. And actually, let's just, so folks know, like, it's other respiratory diseases now. It's been expanded. Make sure that you're not like having someone nickel and dime you over this test, that test. Are you sick? Are you contagious? Then you have access to this. Like, it's And it's hard, you know, without those advocates in a labor union to be able to know those, you know, you don't have the orientation where they tell you what you need to.
Exactly. Yeah. And when, and as union members and, you know, working under our CBAs, we collective bargaining agreements, we have, that's an advantage that we have. I guarantee you with, even with family leave, when it starts in 2024, there will not be a lot of outreach from management to workers. Because, you know, they want to keep you in that seat working. So they're not going to encourage you any kind of way to take off or let you know what your rights are. So if you don't know, you could go to work sick, you know, infect someone else, or, you know, your family member's sick, your child is sick, and you're sending them to school because you can't take off to be with them or take them to the doctor. But that, you know, that is changing. And it's changing now because the premiums are being paid and the leave starts in 2024.
You work at the Capitol a lot. I've done some work at the Capitol too. I was actually reading about when they passed the 8-hour day law in Colorado, and the response from the folks who helped pass that was the same that we sometimes feel, where we're like, it wasn't enough. It's not good enough. Implementation's going bad. There's not enough enforcement. And I just like felt so much solidarity for the people, you know, over 100 years ago talking about, you know, this hard fought, hard won rule that, you know, wasn't exactly what they expected.
And it just lets you know that it's a constant fight. I mean, one of the ones that really resonated with me and just warmed my heart is when the agriculture bill was passed, because, you know, I have aunts and stuff in Mississippi Delta, where one has since passed away a year or so ago. But I was so happy to let her know that was, you know, there was some work being done on that in the state of Colorado, because they all worked in agriculture, you know, growing up and sharecropped and did all that. And it was, the stories are just would break your heart, that what they went through as far as, you know, working constantly from sun to sundown, couldn't go to school, you know, because they had to stay and work, and just didn't get anything from it. They were exempted from Social Security and, you know, other social programs, where now in their old age, they're not drawing anything. And a lot of our like extra money, the ones in the family who do work, goes to help them out to make sure they have food and, you know, shelter and what they need. And it's just, it really affects the whole family dynamic, even as generations pass. So when that was passed in Colorado, I was like, this is just wonderful. I couldn't wait to tell my aunts. You know, my mother, of course, she has dementia, so she wouldn't understand. But even her, you know, stories that she used to tell us, she was one of the only ones. She was the youngest of my grandmother's children, so she got a chance to go to school. But the others, you know, they didn't. They work in domestic and in agriculture, and both of those particular industries were exempt from paying into Social Security.
Yeah, that's such a, you know, an amazing change for Colorado. But again, still trying to get the word out to everyone so that they know their rights within it. My mom's a domestic worker. She listened to committee hearings for hours on end. She was she listened to the show. So hi, Mom. But you know, it was, you know, a way to exclude people from the basic rights that were passed in the 40s or late 30s, or mid 30s. And it's, you know, to me, a point of pride to see Representative Yadira Caraveo going to Congress. She was such a fierce fighter for that bill. How long did it take for you to feel comfortable at the Capitol to advocate, to show up in like the you know, the marble and all that?
Ooh, comfortable. So I'm still, sometimes I still get like a little bit intimidated. It was new for me, and, you know, just being a little scared, you know, am I going to say the right thing? You know, I'm still a little bit, I'm better. I'm a lot better. Every year I get better at feeling more comfortable with them, but I still sometimes have moments of like, damn, what am I doing here? You know,
I'm glad you said that, because I feel that a lot. I do. I'm like, this place was not built for poor kids from Lakewood. Like, it is, exactly. You know, all marble and bad art and, you know, like.
Yeah. And like, and my dad always tell me, you know what you know. Study what you need to study. Read what you need to read. And just, you know, don't ever be, try not to be ever without an answer. And so he encourages me a lot. you know, as a person who kind of marched during the civil rights era and everything, he said, you have an opportunity, you know, to affect change. So do your best. You know what your capabilities are and do them and have more confidence in yourself. Because sometimes I lack confidence. I was like, oh my God. And I, you know, lean on others there. KJ, for instance, I lean on her a lot.
You mentioned KJ, our lobbyist for the Colorado AFL, so Kirsten Forseth. So, yeah. Also lean on a lot. But, you know, it's funny. You have to look back to, like, what's the worst that could happen? And I can remember being in a meeting and I spoke up and it was not a good thing. It was not like well received. And I'm just like, all right, I'm going to be quiet the rest of this meeting and probably several after.
Yeah, it does. It's like, it shuts you down because you're like, oh, shoot, I screwed up. You know, maybe I shouldn't say anything. And then it was like, Sandra, you have a thought on this or whatever? And I'll be like, you know, scared. Like, I don't know whether this makes sense or what. And that's with all meetings in labor until you get to a point where you know that you know that you know. And it's intimidating. It's hard, you know, you don't want to offend anybody, but you still want to get your thoughts out because I've learned over the course of being there that, you know, my thoughts do matter and most of the time they make sense. So, you know, say it and just deal with whatever the consequences are. But if you don't say it, then you never get it out there, you know.
Well, and I just appreciate having you at the Capitol because big surprise to our listeners, you know, there's a lot of corporate lobbyists down there, despite it being, you know, considered a progressive state, a progressive city. There's not a lot of folks that are, I would consider, progressive lobbyists. There's some, you know, the labor unions, there's some other groups as well, but it's a small community of folks who are what I would say doing the right thing down there. And so it's always been a pleasure to have you around because you speak from that, like, back to the stewardship. It's like you speak from years of stewardship, and that's helpful. But again, helpful that other folks don't necessarily always feel comfortable there. So we are a week away from the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. In Denver, we celebrate with a parade, a march parade. CWA, your union, often gives out hot cocoa. What are your plans to honor the Martin Luther King Day weekend? And do you want to leave us with some final thoughts?
I do plan to do the parade and then volunteer. Brother Jeff has another organization where they'll be giving out free meals. I think it's going to be at the MLK, the library on Colfax or whatever. I went last year. So I think I'll volunteer to help out there from 12:30 to 4 after attending the parade. So those are my tentative plans, unless something changed. The stuff always come up, of course. I'm happy to be in this space. I just think CWA, you know, Quad 7, District 7, and you guys at the AFL for just, you know, giving me the opportunity and kind of trusting me to get better and to do what needs to be done at the Capitol, and just, you know, putting a lot of folks who are knowledgeable and experienced, putting me, you know, in contact with them and around them. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And sometimes I think maybe this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. It's definitely where you're supposed to be. It's definitely where you're supposed to be. Yeah. And excited for the parade as well. We'll be out there with a booth before the march starts for anyone who wants to join a union or learn more about them. This has been the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Denver, Boulder, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guest today has been Sandra Parker Murray, a member of the Communication Workers of America and Colorado Independent Drivers Union. Sandra was recently honored by Towards Justice, a group in Colorado that fights against wage theft and other issues. Sandra has recently been honored by Towards Justice, a group in Colorado that fights against wage theft and other issues, for her work advancing workers' rights. Thank you so much again for being on the show.
Thank you, Robert.